Hello, Great Minds. It's Friday, and that means it's time for Drinks with Great Minds in History. So welcome to the show, everyone, and thanks for listening. On tonight's episode, we will try to figure out who is greater in our first battle of two great women on the show, two great women of history, Isabella of Castile and Catherine of Russia, to see which one really is the great. In the first of what I am sure will be many, it's the Battle of the Queens. And to figure this out, I am joined once again by my high school history teacher, Colin Farrell, and as always, Schott's regular guy. Now you might be wondering where the First Lady of Schott's is. She couldn't make it tonight. Something came up, but I told her if she is home or ready to go, surprisingly, just to pop in the middle. So who knows, we might get a little Kelly Rizel right when we need her most. But other than that, it's the guys talking about the ladies. So we'll see how this goes. Hopefully
we miss you, Kel.
Yeah, we miss you, Kel, but hopefully we don't sound like chauvinistic assholes in the process. I want you to know we had a lady on board. Oh, well, we'll see. So how are we doing tonight, gentlemen?
Good. We were just talking about finally getting our vaccine shots. Mm-hmm. It's like return back to normal somewhat for some of us.
Yeah, Florida's over always a year. Been kind of normally abnormal.
Yeah. It's a big weight off my mind. My folks got the shot, so it's like...
That's fantastic. And you're coming down my way, right?
Yeah, next week I'll be in Cocoa and visiting my sister, and we're going to put this vaccine to the test.
Put it to the test. No better place to put it to the test than Florida.
Right, Florida. Ground zero.
Yeah. Well,
don't paintball me with those pepper spray guns that you Florida spring breakers have got going down
there. Oh, my gosh, yes. Well, you know. Yeah, that was interesting to hear about for Yikes. Certain. So how are you doing tonight, Luke?
Doing good. Weather here in Western PA has taken the turn. So golf courses are opening up. So that's always good.
That's fun. So you a big golfer?
I'm not good at it, but I like to golf.
I like to golf too. I'm not good at it, but I love to drink. And I think the two go hand in hand really well.
Yes.
Yes. I always had a good time drinking while golfing.
Any sport that you can play while drinking, like bowling, golf, mm-hmm. that is a great sport.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bowling. I have never – so nothing else new with you guys?
No, not
really. Of course, I just got back from my trip from Pennsylvania, which was wonderful to, you know, get to try some of the old brews that I wasn't necessarily the hugest fan of when I was up there. Headed up to North Country in Slippery Rock, tried a really good IPA, and then they had a drink there called the Catherine the Great, which I didn't try because it's like – it was like a milk stout thing. I'm just not a big fan of those, but yeah. I was like, no way. So I'll post the picture to the Twitter page or to the Twitter or whatever. I'm sounding old, to the tweeter.
Did you sample any Yingling while you were north here to get
I'll
a deal?
I'll tell you this. So then we went to, after North Country, we went to Butler Brew Works, and I had a really good hazy IPA, Fly South. That was delicious. Shout out to Butler Brew Works. That's about my favorite brewery up there. But yes, I did get to sample a Yingling. I did at my cousin's house. He has a keg in his bar that he built. And I had a couple Yingling drafts fresh off the tap, which was fantastic. And I also got to try a little Johnny Walker Blue in that same visit, which was quite fun. An experience in itself.
Yeah, I'll say.
So, yeah, that was cool. But yeah, the trip to Pittsburgh was great. You know, I think I posted it on Facebook or something. That funny moment when you're going to the Pittsburgh airport and it's like, oh, there's a T-Rex skeleton and a George Washington statue right beside each other.
Franco Harris.
Franco, that's right.
Only in Pittsburgh. The three titans of Pennsylvania history. The T-Rex, Washington, and some Steeler.
They complement each other well.
Yes.
Yeah, the immaculate reception.
They really do. Oh, my. Well, we should probably get to talking because I'm sure we'll do bullshitting still. But before we talk drinks tonight, a huge shout-out and thanks to our drinking buddies, supporters on the Patreon page, the Professor Buzzkill podcast. Everybody, I'm sure, remembers Professor Joe Kuhill, the host of that. Be sure to go check it out. Another great podcast that I'll be guesting on later this week. So big shout-out to the gang over at Say Hello to the Bad Guy podcast. And, of course, our buddy Andrew Cheevers. Thanks, guys, for supporting the show. Cheers to you. Cheers indeed.
Cheers.
So everyone drinking tonight?
I am drinking an ice cold traditional lager.
What's it? I'm sorry. From where?
from Yingling, America's oldest brewery in Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
Yingling, America, wow. Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Yeah, I should have gone there. I got to go to the Tampa one eventually. They're turning into a big like outdoor thing. That looks really, really fucking awesome. I tell you, I mean, if we're answering these questions so slowly, we're going to be struggling as the show goes. What are you guys drinking tonight? Boy, I don't remember. Colin, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking an old Pittsburgh brand Duquesne.
Oh, nice.
In honor of your university.
My graduate alma mater, Duquesne University.
Yeah, but that's right.
Yeah. I haven't had one of those in a very long
time. Well, I guess it was an older beer, and then it kind of like somebody in Pittsburgh bought the recipe, and then they brought it back after being out of circulation for some time. So I don't know all the details.
I'll have to be sure to get some when I come up next. Now, I will tell you one big epic disappointment for me when I was up is I could not find a single Great Lakes beer anywhere I went. I don't know if it's because of COVID.
Wow. But don't tell Sherry.
I had to because she had asked me to pick up a new one that's out and, of course, some other ones because we always buy each other drinks, which is actually going to tie to the shot I'm doing tonight. When we travel, we always bring back little airplane bottles or a single beer or something, you know. I couldn't bring any. I was like, Sherry, I looked six places. I could not find a single Elliot Ness, Edmund Fitzgerald, anything.
Wow.
It was kind of super depressing because I really wanted a Commodore Perry. But the Blue Label kind of made up for it. But tonight I am drinking a wine that I don't like that much. I bought it. It was cheap. It was a Moscato. Moscatos normally are cheap. I don't necessarily have a problem with Moscatos. In fact, speaking of PA, I love and have drank many times Narcisse Winery's Pink Catawba, which is like a sweet wine like Moscato. So I don't have an objection to sweet wines, but this Moiselle Pink Moscato, really fucking sweet. I'm probably drinking like more sugar than a Mountain Dew right now. But it's old and it's smooth and it's fine. It's just a super sweet wine. But I'm drinking it tonight because I don't know if you remember way back in the Catherine saga, I drank pink drinks and only pink drinks because of the story about her wearing pink to her first introduction with her mother-in-law who decreed that only she could wear pink at court when she was Empress of Russia. So pink for her plus Moiselle, the ladies, cheers, plus wine, you know. Catholic backstory there. So,
hey, talking about sweet wines, I want to quickly just shout out at Fitzgibbon Meadery.
What is Fitzgibbon Meadery?
It's a meadery that just recently opened up in Elwood City. They make all homemade mead, and it is wonderful.
Wow.
I had their original blend, which it's like a honey wine, and it was great.
Fun. Like a honey mead. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they have their own hives, their own bees, and harvest their own berries and everything. It was really, really good.
Nice. Wow, that's mead's awesome, but man, it'll knock you on your ass. Yeah, that's like powerful stuff. Mead,
oh yeah, it was like 14.5% alcohol by volume. I think it was up there. It was pretty good.
I don't know mead. I don't know if that's something I've tried before. So
I've tried. I had some over in Ireland, and I think I have some periods of my life that blacked out. I don't know exactly what happened in those days, but mead induced.
I wasn't sure if I was going to like it either. Like it's like a honey wine. Like that's the best way I could describe it.
But it kicks your ass.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 Okay.
It's easy to toss them back because it's so sweet, and then it catches up with you real fast.
So, no, that's awesome. Excuse me one second. You can put her on the bed with me. Okay. My dog, she's being finicky right now, and Jackie's trying to do something for work, so because she has to work in the night. So, I had to. She's been a little shit. Normally, she's the best podcasting partner. Not Jackie. The dog's being a little shit. Oh, my God. Cullen's face is like, damn, Zach.
Poor Jackie.
You better watch.
You're getting paper signed to you.
Oh, my gosh. No, Jackie's not being a little shit. She's being super helpful, as always. Wouldn't be anything without Mrs. DJMH, whatever this is. So I guess we should probably start talking about history, however good that'll be, before we lose any of our non-drinking listeners. So I guess it's time for Shots Heard Around the World. Catherine v. Isabella. I guess Isabella v. Catherine. It is the Isabella saga. But first, it's some history for you, a reason to drink for me. It's the history of the great minds that made history come to be. All right, so let's get to it. If this is your first round of shots, guess what? Here's what we do. We drink, we debate, we disagree. Sometimes we sound stupid. Sometimes we manage to sound really smart. And in the end, we try to figure out who deserves this round's crown of greatness. To start, let's go back to the beginning. One thing that stood out to me about these two ladies was their rise to ultimate, I guess ultimate is the word, power in their respective states. In an age where almost everything and everyone was against them. So, who do you think, in your honest opinions, had a more interesting rise to power?
I guess I'll go first. Sure. I would go with Catherine because she wasn't even Russian. Mm-hmm. And yet she gets emerged into this world where, you know, she's, what, from Prussia originally or somewhere?
Some German, German state, yeah.
And then not only, I mean, how she takes power by basically bumping out her full-blooded czar husband.
Bumping out her hemorrhoid of a husband.
Well, I mean, with Isabella, she was a Catholic monarch who lived in a Catholic country who spoke the language. So talk about a fish out of water. Catherine, I think, had a more impressive immersion in, you know, into that culture.
If not solely by the fact that she seemed to have a greater obstacle in into her right to rule, I guess.
And then even after she took power, there was the Peter III, the whole Pugachev rebellion, right, that almost threw her out. So she had to almost fight her way back into, like,
Puga Peter. I forgot about Puga Peter.
Yeah, originally he got shivved in a bar fighter. He got killed, her ex-husband. But
don't
then
fuck with Catherine.
Somehow he came back. Yeah.
I forgot Peter the about Third. The Pugachev rebellion. That's
true. Was crazy.
I mean, the rise.
Fun times.
One of the things that I will say about these two great women is their rise seemed to be very drawn out. Even once they had power or were close to power or were in line for power, power was always something they had to fight for and maintain. So their rise almost seemed to never end until they really had absolutely achieved success. I think, unlike men who ruled in this period, I mean, this is really the 14, 15, 16, 1700s. It's a long period of time. We're talking early modern Europe. Men didn't have to justify their rule as much with actions. But I think if a woman queen sought to have the same amount of power, look at Elizabeth, the Spanish Armada, and reaffirming religion. Look at Mary, even her sister, who ruled powerfully, brutally suppressing Protestantism, and Catherine with rebellion in Crimea and Poland, constantly, constantly working, like society was demanding that they prove themselves. I don't know if that's true. And
and with Mary and Elizabeth, not only did they have to fight the religion thing, they had to fight the men, the groups of men in the parliament that kept, you know, breathing down their necks, you know, to get married to a man so that a man could make the decision.
Quite true of many states. I think Spain for certain. Isabella is probably the best one they got, but the Habsburgs were complicated.
Big chin.
Yes, big chin.
I have to say, Zach, I laughed out loud at your surprising that they could fit their chins through doorways.
Through the doorway.
I thought that was hysterical.
You know, the chins are a running joke. Did you guys listen to the Twist of Psych episode yet?
Yeah.
Okay, so the strawberry blonde thing, did you hear Sherry's mm-hmm. calling me out?
That's funny.
A running joke in my class. Well, one of the other big running jokes in my class is the Habsburg incestuous chin. And it was a moment of pride where one of my juniors came up to me and said, Mr. DeBacco, over spring break, I was in a museum and I saw a painting and I was like, that's a Habsburg. And I was like, I have taught you well. Now, it was Diego Velázquez's painting of Philip IV, so it's a very popular painting. I probably showed it in class too. But the fact that this student just knew right away, now that's a Habsburg if I've ever seen one. That's great. So,
yeah, the family tree doesn't have many branches, unfortunately.
It's like a vine, interwoven vine of bushwork that just
the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and it hits every single damn branch on the way down.
So yeah, absolutely. And if that, you know, if those branches were, you know, cousins that they like to have sex with, for sure, I would totally agree. So Luke, what do you think?
Well, kind of going off of what you were saying earlier, Zach, they both had to. Even after assuming power, they both had to keep proving that they were the ones that had power. So Catherine, I mean, as far as which one was more interesting, I have to agree that it's probably Catherine, purely because she's not Russian. She's supplanted into a brand new culture, in a brand new court tries to westernize it.
A true outsider.
And make it,
yeah, I see what you guys are saying.
Yeah, she's a true outsider. She has to learn Russian. She has to she converts to Russian Orthodoxy. So I think she had a much steeper hill to climb than Isabella did. But I don't think Isabella's is any less interesting, though. Mm-hmm. Like, she's right. When she was born, she was, what, third in line to the throne?
She was second in line to the throne, but after her younger brother was born, she was automatically demoted to third in line purely because of her gender.
Okay, so male primogeniture, yeah. So she's third in line to the throne, and even after she made an agreement with her brother, as you were saying on the show, he was like, I'm a keeps it. And she kind of has to fight with him still, her own blood.
Did you say, I'm a keep it?
I'm a keep it.
I think he's dropping some slang there.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I completely agree that neither one is less interesting than the other, but, and this is my passion for Isabella shining through. There's something about how Catherine had to seize power in a coup, but I would consider what Isabella did, seizing power in a coup, equally out of necessity. Both Catherine and Isabella, I think, made the decisions they did because they wanted to better their kingdoms. And Isabella's brother, Enrique, shit king. Peter III, shit czar. Catherine and Isabella, two of the best female monarchs that graced European history, if you ask me. Because they both set out to do so much, and they were both limited by their time. Not necessarily by their sex. I don't think that once they were monarchs, they were super limited. They were very good at managing the people around them and getting the people that would support their claims to power, not to try and diminish them. But I think with Isabella, you've got more fight, in all honesty. So that's what I'm going to say, Isabella. You've got the fact that nobody wanted her to be queen in her family. Her brother was fighting actively against her. Peter was just playing around. Catherine was actually almost chosen in the end, whereas Isabella was also chosen. But with the civil war, and then the moment there's a civil war, the moment that civil war ends, bam, Portugal invades. She just is like constantly trying to legitimize her power, and finally she's able to do it. The only other thing I would say is if we think about Isabella's rise to power, her rise to power also includes creating what becomes the modern Spanish state. Isabella inherited the Russia that, you know, was pretty, yeah, Peter the Great's Russia. Isabella made Castile into Spain in more ways than I can count. So I don't know. Interesting.
Zach, I mean, we know what kind of marriage that Peter and Catherine had.
Yeah.
What kind of marriage did Ferdinand and Isabella have? I could probably guess, but I don't know the facts.
Sherry asked a similar question too, and the way I would put it is Ferdinand, like Machiavelli, I consider him to be a true pragmatist, and Isabella as well, and I don't ever sell her short. The reality is I think that they had a good partnership, and I think that they saw what they both had to offer. Ferdinand was an able military commander. He was fine at ruling his own state. You know, even though he had his moments where he didn't like being second fiddle to Isabella's Castile, he was the inferior state. And Isabella brought a powerful state to the Union. And I think that she saw him as a way to legitimize her claim and be able to fight for it. I mean, without Aragonese troops in various points in her life, she wouldn't have been able to win the war she won. So I think they had a good partnership. I know that he was certainly a lover of the ladies. He had a couple mistresses in his life, and in the end he married the niece of the King of France. But either way, he marries a niece of the French king, and I see him as a pragmatist, not a betrayer of Isabella. After her death, he marries to secure the northern borders, constantly fighting for, you know, autonomy from France in a way. So I think they had a good partnership, short answer. I don't know. Hope that answers your question. As good a marriage as they could have for the time. Okay, so typically, now I would ask who would win in a fist fight, but I don't know. Seems a little chauvinistic for three guys to be sitting here and debating which woman would win in a fist fight. But then I sit here and say, is it sexist not to ask the question when we're dealing with two ladies? Am I being, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the balance is. And I was really hoping Kelly would be here to just make it easy, but she's not. So what the hell? Let's just go with it. Who would win in a fist fight? Not that Isabella, I think, would ever sink to such levels, but who's going to come out winning in this throwdown, this fist fight, this brawl between Isabella of Castile and Catherine the Great? I have my answer.
I'm going to say Catherine.
Oh, me too, totally. Just because she picked up that Russian bear mentality. Like you said,
I think Isabella thinks that she's too, that's below her. She has people to fight for her.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of her thing, too. Colin?
During when she was challenging Peter, she dressed in the, that's the famous picture of her in the green coat. in a military uniform. And I mean, she was leading some of the troops on the march to the Winter Palace. So I don't ever remember Isabella being at the head of a column.
There are a few of her being at the table deciding military plans, but you're right. A Spanish Catholic queen, never. Russia's always a little different in that sense. But I agree. Catherine charging out, that beautiful scene. Oh, my God.
Wasn't she trained in fencing? I thought I read somewhere that she was at one point.
I actually don't know that.
From a younger age. But I remember Potemkin, the young officer that runs up to her horse and gives her the sword knot. Because her sword, she was dressed perfectly, but she was missing that one.
I don't know. Of course, Grigory Potemkin will be one of her later mistresses. I don't know.
Right. And a minister, yeah. And then, so I don't know, but I don't know about fighting ability if she was, if she just dressed the part or she was.
I bet Catherine could whoop some ass. I think she would just bite the floor with Isabella of Castile, and I love her. But I think Catherine picked up that cold Russian mentality, and she would have just beat the shit out of anybody in her way. So, Colin, you say Catherine, Luke, you say Catherine. Poor Isabella's losing this fist fight. Well, let's get back to a serious question. So, which great mind do you feel accomplished more in their life?
Both ladies opened up a new frontier. When we think of Catherine, we forget that she's the first Russian czar to reach out a delegation to the Japanese and to the Chinese. She sent people away on the far east side of her empire of Siberia. And I know, Isabella's going to get credit for the New World and sending, Columbus on his way, but both women kind of pushed past their empires, so to speak.
That's true, and I'm a firm believer that the Americas would have been, quote, discovered no matter what, considering Cabral did it by accident in 1500. I don't normally engage in what ifs, but it probably would have happened not long after the way the Portuguese.
But yeah, I guess I would give it to Isabella because the Treaty of Tordesillas, how that split the whole Portuguese versus Spanish holdings. She had the green light from the Catholic Church to go west, and she capitalized on it, taking the whole Caribbean and Central South America. I mean, definitely the people she sends do damage, but she does transform, the whole opening up the new world. That was under her administration.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Columbus's landings in the Caribbean and the people that followed until her death in 1504 and after with Ferdinand in 1516, and then her grandson Charles the First. I mean, you're right. I mean, Isabella, that's a world Isabella built. So you're giving the nod to Isabella?
I have to. I mean, I just think in terms of, Catherine did expand the empire on the Black Sea and the Crimea. She pushed her borders out to Poland. There's no doubt that she expanded Russia too.
Pushed,
but
just pushed Poland out of borders. I don't know what the proper terminology is.
Right.
Luke, any thoughts?
I think I know my answer. What was the question again? Who accomplished more?
Yeah, who accomplished more?
I think I have to go with Catherine, and I'm going to take this in a different direction than you went, Cullen, and that's going to be as far as personal accomplishments go. I still think Catherine has the edge. Like, her and Isabella both had to jump through hoops, but I think Catherine had to jump through hoops that were on fire. I mean, like we've already discussed on this show, she wasn't Russian, so she had to convince an entire people that she was Russian, forced the court to adopt westernized governing tactics, made the court language French, and she opened up. I'm pretty sure that she changed it to French as the language.
I mean, that would be lingua franca. Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah.
I mean, yeah, she used to have Diderot and French philosophers in court. I can imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
She opened up new frontiers for Russia, really made it the great power that it was, that it came to be known for up until really World War One.
I agree with that statement. I think that she deserves more credit almost than Peter the Great, if I'm going to be totally honest. I really think that in many ways she does. She built Russia into an expanding, growing state. Peter westernized it a little bit, and it didn't. By Catherine's reign, there were still bears walking around the streets of St. Petersburg. By the end of it, no bears.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Zach. I would have to give the edge to Catherine there if we're comparing her to Peter the Great. If Peter planted the seed, Catherine watered the plant.
I'm actually going to give it to Isabella. I feel that she accomplished a great deal more. I think that in terms of, for me, it comes down to, in no small part, expansion. The minor gains in Crimea, which one is it? I don't know. I always get yelled at for saying the wrong one. I'm going to say it's a potato thing.
Crimea River.
Crimea. Ooh. They said to Catherine, sorry, my Crimean listener, if I have one. And then expanding into Poland, I mean, she might have drastically increased the size of the of her country, her kingdom, from what it was at the beginning, but nothing like Isabella. Isabella had a kingdom of Castile, used marriage, used war, used patronage, used force, used religion to conquer and unify Spain and the New World. And she set the foundations, the framework for all of that. She made a Catholic Spain, which did not exist. And we can say to her neck like it did, 70-80% of Spain or Iberia was Catholic when Isabella took the throne. Maybe, maybe not. The population of conversos and Jews were regularly welcomed into the Spanish court when Isabella became queen. The Muslims still controlled swaths of the south, and the Muslim presence in those territories, like areas like Valencia, which was an Aragonese kingdom, very high population, and terrible, terrible actions. But Isabella rooted out every enemy in her path. And I think that her greatest accomplishment will always be using the church, using her husband, using her state, and using her mind to unify a very divided Spain. It's hard for people to understand that Spain is Castile, Aragon, Navarre is always trying to do its own thing. Valencia is always
The Basques are always trying to do their own thing.
Barcelona, Catalonians are still trying to do their own thing.
God, yeah.
Granada is its own separate kingdom with its own separate dynasty, with its own separate population of people when Isabella becomes queen, and she is forced to do what 7 centuries of men failed to do, reunite the kingdoms of Spain. And it did not die. It has not died even today. In fact, it only grew and then shrunk totally. But well, you know, that's a story for about 7 other days. But we will get to cover that a little bit at the end of the season when we talk about the Spanish-American War and Big Teddy. But I'm giving it to Isabella, and also I agree, Colin, you have to give her credit for the New World. You have to give her credit for patronage that voyage. So running through it, Colin, did you say Isabella or Catherine?
I said Isabella because of the New World and the race to open up to beat the Dutch, to beat the Portuguese. I mean, I guess the Portuguese had to stay east of Tordesillas.
Well, only because she said, screw it, I'm going to do what I want anyway.
Passage. Everything was up for grabs in the New World. And
Isabella took a risk. We can give credit to Columbus for the risk. We're going to talk about that later on the Patreon bonus episode. But and Luke, you said Catherine accomplished more in her reign. All right, so before we finish out our conversations on Isabella and Catherine, I wanted to take a quick pivot to this episode's Patreon bonus last call question. In this case, on a topic we have discussed, or at least in a way discussed before. So the question I wanted to ask is, how do you think Isabella squares off against some other great minds that we've covered on the show? Specifically, how does this leader, Isabella, compare against the leader George Washington, the tyrant, Joseph Stalin, and the explorer, Christopher Columbus? Here we'll discuss the qualities of a good leader, the qualities of a terrible tyrant, and who deserves more credit for the discovery of the New World, the explorer or the patron. Listeners, just follow the link in the show notes to get access to this exclusive Last Call Patreon discussion, as well as all kinds of bonus questions and fun conversations from A Twist of Psych Shots and even more. And what the hell, support the show in the process. So head on over there and check that out. So as we wrap up this round of Shots Heard Around the World, I have to ask, who deserves more criticism for their failings? Actually, I should say, be sure to go back and check out that Patreon episode. It was fun. We discussed all sorts of crazy things from the tyranny of Stalin to the leadership of Washington and a few chicken or egg conundrums and an extra bonus question along the way. So be sure to go back and check that out. But as we wrap up this round of Shots Heard Around the World, I have to ask again, who deserves the most criticism for their failings? Isabella or Catherine?
If you had just said who deserves the most criticism, I would say Isabella. But who deserves more criticism for their failings? I mean, you can always hold Catherine up against the, I'm going to free the serfs, and then she didn't free the serfs.
As opposed to Isabella said, I'm going to kick out the Jews and the Muslims, and then she kicked out the Jews and the Muslims.
Yeah, yeah.
There's hypocrisy there. Just
that's really tough to answer. I mean, I mean, it's awful that she ends up kicking them out, but whether you want to consider that a failure on in terms of her morality?
Well, that's a separate question, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that Catherine deserves a lot of criticism for her hypocrisies, her willingness, or her need to concede to the nobility in Russia and not following her great plan, the great instruction. Colin, what do you think? Who deserves more criticism? Who failed worse?
Boy, Luke brought up a great point about the whole, you know, she was an enlightened despot who knew better. She knew better. She, you know, she kept company with Diderot and Voltaire and people that would tell her, like, look, you got to free these people. This is not, you know, this is not free will. And she didn't do it. But I go back to Isabella breaking her word, you know, with Granada, like saying that they were allowed to live there in peace if they surrendered. And then she breaks her word. And, you know, I guess in my historical sense, you know, you're only as good as the word you give. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to go back and betray, that gets some black marks from me. You know, we could equally say that Catherine was very horrendous to the Jews herself in her own country.
Oh, she was?
She moved them to Poland.
Yeah.
She declared them foreigners in their own land at one point. There were pogroms that were sanctioned in order to push them off Russian lands further west into, like, you know, out of the country.
That's interesting because you guys made me think two different things. Isabella didn't know better. I guess she was willing to break every promise possible, but in a sense, she grew up in a Catholic country in a Catholic world.
Yeah, it's for Jesus, right? Yeah.
It's for Jesus. Isabella didn't necessarily know, but Catherine did know better, and she just didn't act in the correct way. And I guess in that sense, maybe she failed a little. Maybe deserves a little more criticism for her failings and shortcomings. But that bleeds right into the main question, which is always, who's the bigger piece of shit?
Oh, Isabella.
I was surprised how high I ended up ranking.
I mean, she's just ruthless. Like we were saying, kicking people out, going back on her word and kicking people out after she said that you could stay, it's fine.
A broken promise. Yep.
Broken promises. The Inquisition.
Yeah. Her baby. If you ask me, her baby.
Oh. You could argue that that all the atrocities of Columbus could be tied back to her by extension. Mm-hmm. And yet. She is venerated as a servant of God.
Well, she did try to intervene, but like Catherine with the serfs, often just backtracked when it fit her. As long as money's money. With Isabella, with the Inquisition, I mean, just nobody expected it, but she's a big piece of shit.
Oh, that was a good one. No one expects it.
Nobody expects Isabella to be a big piece of shit. I mean, I would say it is her brainchild, her baby. Using Catholicism as a tool, she'd used it and was a total piece of shit about it. Colin, who are you thinking?
They're both guilty of those sins. I don't know which to put as, you know, I guess Catherine, because Catherine knew better. She had there was an inflection point with Russia where she could have freed the serfs. She could have brought Russia into the European fold, and she chose to not do that.
I don't know that she could have, because there was a relationship. You know, I feel like she wanted to. It was in her great interest.
She wanted to stay in power. She would have lost the backing of the church. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she would have lost the nobles.
Yeah.
So she, and I guess you could say she was trapped in her own time.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean,
I want to add too, saying Catherine knew better. I think Isabella knew better too. Like I will not be convinced that she didn't realize that doing these horrible things to Jews and Muslims wasn't a bad thing.
Yeah. And the Indians. She sat here and advocated for better treatment until it was inconvenient for her. In my honest opinion, I've seen it in several accounts. She might have planted the seeds for toleration, but it never came to pass because she didn't fight for it. She decided
on her decree, so she could have enforced it if she wanted.
She set the tone what it was going to be like, you know? But I agree, it's the tone. The tone is set by her and Columbus and Ferdinand and other assholes like Diego Velazquez. The early tone of the Caribbean is set. Isabella plays no small part in that. And she might have had dreams of a peaceful interaction of converting the natives to Catholicism, but the only way that she was happy is if you were Catholic. And that's not nice.
Yeah.
No.
No matter when you're looking.
Yeah. She knew it was wrong. She didn't care. She wanted a Catholic state. And she got it.
Yep. I keep referencing that she wanted the subject. She loved the subject that she wanted. That was it. The other ones, in her eyes, damned. All right, so it sounds like we're both, all of us or two of us are leaning towards Isabella for the biggest feature.
Isabella.
All right.
Oh, Colin, you've shifted.
Oh, Isabella.
Yeah, when you're right. Yeah, I have to come over, I guess.
All right, so we want to wrap this up quickly because I don't want to keep you guys on too much longer, but really quickly, if you could have one of these two women leading your nation today, which one would you choose?
Ooh.
I'm taking Catherine. Hands down.
Yeah, me too.
I can't handle that religious bullshit.
I'm taking
Catherine all the way. She's like a damn good time. I love Isabella to death. I really do, but Catherine seems like a better time. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm going Catherine as well.
Yeah, just on the separation of not having a theocracy, I suppose. Awesome. Yeah. And Catherine, it wasn't a big deal for her because she converted to Orthodox just to get married, so
absolutely.
Religion didn't play a big deal.
Well, it's time for the final question then. When it comes down to it, who left a larger footprint on the world they left behind? I have my answer, hands down.
Okay.
But I'm going for footprint. I mean, she doubled the size of the Earth. You know, her reign saw the double of the size of the Earth almost. Yeah. So, I mean, the footprint of Isabella's reign, Spain still has next to no Jews and no Muslims today. It is predominantly Catholic, and the New World is Catholic, and that's all Isabella. Whether it's you can give credit to the people, smaller people like Bishop
Latin America.
I think Catherine has a bigger legacy. I think Isabella has a bigger footprint.
What's the difference?
We don't talk about Isabella very much. Catherine dominates the conversation.
Catherine the Great has a TV show. I like
Catherine the Great has a TV show.
Who's remembered in the books more, and it's Catherine
the Great. Well, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying about Isabella. If you're just going to say right off the bat, I would say Isabella. Like you said, she doubled the size of the Earth. She kicked off the Spanish Empire.
And Inquisition.
And Inquisition.
And we got some great skits and songs about that.
She firmly established the Catholic state in the Iberian Peninsula. So I would say Isabella right off the top. But Catherine, I think, has a longer and more invasive legacy. Yeah,
I like that. You know, we don't talk. When I say Inquisition, you think probably Tomas de Torquemada. You don't think Isabella of Castile. I get what you're saying, and I like it. I haven't really felt the need to differentiate between legacy and footprint in the past, but in this case, I think it matters.
Same.
Yeah, Luke just summed it up perfectly. I would go with Isabella as well. Footprint, and when you look at even to this day, from Mexico down, practically, other than Brazil, they speak Spanish. They use Spanish, governance. They really are a carbon copy in some ways of laws and regulations and stuff like that. So
Catherine made a whole country disappear.
Did they? I mean, they were back. they came back. The Poles. They disappeared on the map, but they did get their country. But yeah, and the whole idea of there's 90 million souls that she conquered in the New World, or that her people will bring into the Spanish fold. I just have to go with Isabella.
Yeah, I probably got to lean towards Isabella in terms of footprint. But Luke, you've made me totally think about this whole idea about legacy and who's remembered more. And with the great, Isabella has shows too. She's been in things, but nothing like Catherine. I mean, Catherine is getting her moment in the limelight. Well, all right, then it's that time of night, gentlemen. As much as I wish Kelly was here, we're on our own, which means there's no chance of a tie. This is it, where we try to figure out who the hell is the winner of this round's crown of greatness. Isabella of Castile? I should say Isabella or Catherine? Spain or Russia? I don't have a moniker for Isabella. The saint, almost. I don't know. Or the great. Who knows? I will give you a 3-2-1 point, and we will try and likely fail to say our answers in or around at the same time. But before we do that, listeners, be sure to check out the DGMH Facebook page, and be sure that you follow the show on Instagram and Twitter, where you can find exclusive drinking photos, occasional drink ratings, and get a round of DGMH daily. Who the hell doesn't love that? If you love DGMH, I hope you'll leave the show a great, hopefully 5-star review wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and I hope you'll consider visiting the show's Patreon page, support the show in the process, and get access to a lot of great, growing number, really, of great conversations and content. So let's do this. You guys ready? You have your answer in your minds?
Yeah.
I guess. I don't. But let's do this. 3, 2, 1. Isabella. Ooh, I was so torn. Luke always votes Catherine.
I've had a losing streak lately. I don't think I've been on the winning side in a little bit.
I don't know the last time you won. I mean, you and Sherry beat me and kicked out Louie.
You were on Jefferson's side when I went Hamilton.
I was on Jefferson's
side. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I don't know, the time Cullen went rogue.
Yeah, it shifted the world's axis.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, there you have it. Isabella of Castile has, in fact, won this round's crown of greatness. Now, I find myself looking back. So Churchill has won. Did Lafayette win?
Who did Lafayette win? It's all blur now.
I can't remember.
Oh, it was Hamilton. Yeah, he did win.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Every season two player has won so far. Not a single season one person has returned to seize triumph again over the season two people. So that's it. Isabella wins this round of Shots Heard Around the World, and it was a fun one, if not, you know, absent of ladies. But there's still one thing we have to talk about, and that's shots. So what's everyone doing a shot of tonight?
I have got the old screwball.
Oh, yeah?
Peanut butter whiskey.
I've got American honey again.
Ooh. Luke, you told us you were drinking a Yingling, right? Yeah, you are drinking.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
You're back to normal. Yingling and American honey.
Yep.
And Colin loved the screwball so much, he's gone nutty. I love it.
Yep.
So we've got peanut butter whiskey, American honey whiskey, and I am drinking a lemon-flavored vodka that Sherry brought me back from Austin, Texas, from her last trip. Wow. Handcrafted in small batches, Deep Eddy lemon vodka is what I'll be drinking tonight. And it's 70-proof vodka. Distilled 10 times, used real lemons. Oh, I was supposed to shake it well. Hopefully I shook it well enough. Gluten-free! Okay, so there you go. So there's our shots. I'm drinking mine out of a Great Lakes brewing glass in honor of Sherry. Thank you for this hopefully delicious shot that I'm about to do tonight. So let's raise a glass to the ladies of DGMH. Although you were absent from the episode, Isabella and Catherine were here. We've done our very best to rip the ladies out of the margins on this show. And honestly, the great women covered on this show seem to be a little greater than most of the great men, at least in my book. So guys, did you have anything you wanted to add to the send-off tonight?
Huzzah.
Cheers, guys.
Wow, that's smooth. That's dangerous. Too lemony? Did it hurt you?
I think I was supposed to sip that. I don't know if it was a shot or not. Oh.
Wow.
It was good. It's lemony, but it's not. I think it's a sipper, not a shooter.
Oh, okay.
I shot
more lemons than vodka.
It's tart too. Deep Eddy. Okay, I haven't had my ass kicked that hard since I drank vodka. I think it's straight. I think vodka straight just shooting it kills me. I always do it for Catherine. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, cheers.